Okay, we're beginning here, five lines down on the top of Kuf Tet Zayin Amud Aleph. The Gemara here left off yesterday discussing the fact that the source for the Isur Hana'ah with regards to Basar B'Chalav derives from a combination of Orla, Chametz B'Pesach, and Kilea Kerem. The Gemara said that it didn't want to use B'Chazar Adin, the common denominator between all of these items, because then you could undermine that limud with a very simple commonality between the three items that was differentiated from Basar B'Chalav. And over here you have that, which is the fact that Orla, Chametz B'Pesach, and Kilei HaKerem are Gedulei Karka. That would have been sufficient to undermine that ability to have a Tzadah Shaveh, then teaches about an Isur Hana'ah for Basar B'Chalav. So instead the Gemara says that it went down a direction of suggesting that it's Achat Mishalosh. It's one item being learned out of all three of them. The Baalei Tosfot on the top over here explain how that works. That they started out with Orla, they had a problem with Orla, and then they brought Chametz and Kilei HaKerem together, and said, through all of these items, you can then learn out Basar V'Chalav. And that's not a Tzadah Shaveh, but rather a limud that is directly from these items, saying that we have here precedents where, that when there's an Isur Achila, there's also an Isur Hana'ah, and that is both from, according to the Ran, there's a Tzadah Shaveh that is by Orla and Chametz. Plus, you have a limud directly from Kilei HaKerem, which is more powerful than simply the Tzadah Shaveh, which says that the Chumrot of Kilei HaKerem and Chametz don't matter, because then we find a third item, the Kilei HaKerem, which has no Chumrah, and yet still has this din that Isur Achila has an Isur Hana'ah associated with it. And that's much more powerful because it shows you that the Chumrot are meaningless. Had you had in Kilei HaKerem also another Chumrah, then it would have just been saying that none of the Chumrot match up, and the Tzadah Shaveh means that we ignore the Chumrot. But in each case, each individual item has a Chumrah, which is not as powerful as saying that one of them has no Chumrot and still has the same din. According to the Baalei Tosfot, it seems like that it's the limud that comes from Kilei HaKerem and Chametz together that is then built on top of the Orla. And since you brought Chametz B'Pesach and Kilei HaKerem together, we don't have a Chazar Adin between the Chametz B'Pesach and Orla, a common denominator there. Because as the Baalei Tosfot note, if you have Achad Mitarte, we'd automatically say that it's a Chazar Adin. When you have Achad Mitlat, then you have the option to say Chazar Adin, or the option to say that I'm going to learn Achad Mitlato. And by not having Chametz be the offset to Orla, but rather have Chametz and Kilei HaKerem be the lead, and then Orla being added on top of that, then you have Achad Mitlato, and not have the automatic Tzadah Shaveh that comes from going from Orla to Chametz, which would have been two and forced us into a Chazar Adin. So therefore, we're left in a situation of Chadam Mitlata where we're not going to opt for Chazar Adin. And then that doesn't happen automatically when you have three, as opposed to when you have two, Chadam Mitarti, that it automatically be assumed that it is a Chazar Adin. And the limud comes from all three of them, or really, the major focus is on Kilei HaKerem. And because Kilei HaKerem seems to have none of the Chumrot that are applicable by Chametz, which is Karet, or by Arla, which never had a Shata Kosher, and therefore we can learn from Kilei HaKerem to Basar B'Chalav to teach you the fact that it is Asur B'Achila and Asur B'Hana'ah, and that would require a much more fundamental question to undermine that type of limud. And that the Gemara says we have now. The Lifroch, why don't you ask Malik Kilei HaKerem Shken Lo'itala and Shata Kosher? By Kilei HaKerem you have the same problem that you have by Orla, which is that they were never Mutar. Basar B'Chalav, before they became Basar and Chalav together, the Basar and the Chalav were independently Mutarim. Only when you combine them together did they become Asurim. Over here, by Kilei HaKerem, they're Asurim from the outset. As soon as you plant them together, you have a problem of Kilei HaKerem. Tamar Avada Bava, Zoto Merit. You must conclude from this that Kilei HaKerem, Ikran Ne'esar, that the Ikar becomes Asur, V'haytalehem Shata Kosher Kodem HaShrasha, and that they did have a point in time where they were okay at the time that they were rooting or the time that they were planted. So the suggestion now is that when you put these seeds into the ground, those seeds, when they're put into the ground, are mutarim. It's only once they begin to root together and take root at that point, that's when the isur begins. So from the point in time that these seeds were picked or made available to be planted until the time that there's rooting in the ground, these items have a shata kosher. They're okay. They were mutarim. It's only once there's hashrasha does the Isur begin. If that's the case, there was a Shata Kosher for the Kilei HaKerem, similar to that of Basar B'Chalav. Meitiv Rav Shmaya Bar Zi'ira, Hamavir Atzitz Nakuv B'Kerem. Someone who takes a pot with a hole in it through a vineyard, Im Hosif Matayim Asur. If it grows 1/200 during that period of time, it is Asur. Hosif in, Only if it added that amount, is it asur, lo, si, flo. If it didn't add that much, it would not be asur. Which seems to be against what Rada Bahava suggested before, which is as soon as they start to take root and they're planted in the ground, they become asurim. So once they root and they start to grow, everything becomes asur at that point in time. Whereas over here, the suggestion is that it have to grow 1/200th of isur in order to make that which is heter asur. From here, the Bali Tosfot say that it sounds like mashmashaf hakashim va'etz nesarim, which makes it sound like the isur of kila hakerem applies not just to the fruit that grows, but even to the plant itself, to anything that is growing over here, is considered to be asur. And the Bali Tosfot bring from the Gemara Ketubot, which seems to indicate otherwise. So the Bali Tosfot say it depends on the situation. In a situation in which they grow from the outset as kila hakerem together, then in Ochanami, everything becomes asur. Everything that's there, that's growing together, is now asur b'kilei hakerem. On the other hand, if the item already existed or partially grown before they're combined and planted together in order to produce kilei hakerem, in that instance, only when they add on 1/200th of isur will they become asurim. And what the Bali Tosafot point out is that in reality, any time there's fruit already on the item, and then you plant them together, by the time there's 1/200th of fruit that is grown to make them asur, is a shorter window than you would need to add on 1/200th to make it asur in terms of the stalk or the eights or anything else that's growing there. And so therefore, in most scenarios where you're doing the kilei hakerem after it's already started to grow, you didn't plant it that way in the outset, then in all likelihood, the perot, the pre, will become kilei hakerem, but the item itself will not become kilei hakerem because the fruits take much less to make them into kilei hakerem because all they need is 1/200th, and the fruits are very small at that point in time. And therefore, a little addition will make them asurim the kilei hakerem. But for the etzim and other items where they're much more significant, it would need more time for it to become kilei hakerem. Therefore, in most scenarios, the etzim and the kashim, the harder parts, the non-fruit parts of the growth, would not become asur b'kilei hakerem. And he makes it clear that anything that grows after you're planted as kilei hakerem, whether that is the fruits or any of the branches or any of the stalk of the item, all of that is definitely asur b'kilei hakerem. It's just a question if it has the capacity to affect the items that were there beforehand that were mutarim. And that would only be true if they grow amount of 1/200th, then they become asurim because of tarovet. Not because they inherently become asur, but because now you have a mix of kilei hakerem with items that were mutarim, that tarovet is what causes the problem. As opposed to the seeds themselves that had a time period where they were actually kasher, they were totally mutar, and then become asurim. Whereas the growth or the branches themselves that were mutarim before remain mutarim afterwards, just you can't identify them separately anymore because of the mixture of kilei hakerem. And that's why the Gemara here focused on the seed and not on the branches or the trunk or stalk of the items that are growing here that are becoming kilei hakerem. Now, given all of that, the Gemara has a question here, which means it seems to be that there are two different thresholds for becoming asur. There's a view of Rav Adar Baba, which is that growing or starting to grow, rooting in the ground is enough to make it asur. Whereas you have another statement by the Mishnah in Kilayim, in Perek Zayin Mishnah Ched, which seems to indicate that if you take a natsitz nakuv, a natsitz that has a hole in it through a kerem, then that makes that which is inside the natsitz problematic. Now, and first of all, in terms of a natsitz nakuv, if you planted it into the ground and it has a hole in it, the amount that a root can go out of it, then that would become like as if it was planted in the ground itself, and it would become kilei hakerem midoraita. Over here, we're speaking about taking it through a kerem, so it's still in the air, and there's a hole in this pot as you carry it through the airspace of the kerem. Over there, there is a concept that it nourishes from the airspace above the kilei hakerem, and therefore it's going to make something asur. The Mishnah there says asur. It's not clear what asur means. The Rambam gives some sort of cryptic statement about that the Chazal only said this when it was in the ground, not when it was in the air. The Tosfot Yom Tov over there interprets that to mean that the Rambam thinks that it's asur to take an item in a pot with a hole in it through a kerem, if it's going to grow 1/200th during that period of time. But even if you do that and it happens, then neither of the items become asur. Not the kerem and not the zera that's inside the pot. Neither of them themselves become asurim. It's just a sur to do it, because Chazal, because of Maratayin, don't want you to do that. And even though the Ushami and the Tosefta seem to be against that view in the Rambam, as the Tosfot Yom Tov points out, he says that you'd have to explain that the Ushami and the Tosefta, they see it as a knas, that the Zraim in this pot are a surim, but not Meikar Adin, and that's what the Rambam is focused on. On the other hand, the Rav Bartanura, And the Tosafot Yom Tov says that the Mishnayot seem to be Meduyaket like that, as well as the support from the Yishami and the Tosefta, that what is Asur here is the Zraim. The Kerem itself remains fine. It's only the thing in the pot itself that becomes Asur. And that is Asur mi Kilaim, and possibly Kilaim de Oraita, or at least Asur mi Drabanan. But in that case, you see that the Isur is generated by adding on. I mean, if you have 199 parts of Heter, and then you add on one part of Kilei HaKerem, that's what makes it into something that's Asur, because it doesn't have 200 to 1 to be Mevatel, the Isur that's there, which is the required Bitol for Kilei HaKerem. So how do we resolve or reconcile between Rav Adar Bar Abba's statement and that what we see in the Mishnah in Kilayim? Samar Abaye, Trei Krai Ktivei. That's not a problem, because with regards to Kilei HaKerem, there are two psukim, Pentik Dash Hamleya. Over there it says, lest it should sanctify, but not in the positive sense. Sanctify means make it problematic, Hamleya, that which is grown in. Uchtev Hazera. And it also uses the term Zera over there. Pasuk says, Lo Tizra Karmacha Kilayim, Pentik Dash Hamleya, Hazera, Shir Tizra Utvata Karen. So in one point it says Hamleya, which seems to mean that it's grown out, it's maturing and filling in. The other time it says Hazera, which sounds like just from the seeding of it itself, it's problematic. Haketzad, how do I reconcile that? Zroa mikaro bashrasha. If you're planting it from the outset together, then when it roots, that's what creates the Isur. Zroa uba, if you already was planted and they exist, and now you're bringing them together, hosifin, then it's mleya. Then only if it fills in or brings additional growth there is it problematic. Lo hosif, lo. And if it doesn't add on, then that would not be the case. Now the Gemara says, Matanitan Deloki Hai Tano. Our Mishnah is not like this Tano. The Tanya, we have a Baraita. Rabbi Shim ben Yehuda Omer, Mishum Rabbi Shimon, Basar Bechalav Asur Bechila, Umutar Bana. That Basar Bechalav is Asur Bechila, but is Mutar Bana. Unlike our Mishnah, which indicated that there's not only an Isur Achila, but there's also an Isur Hana'a associated with it. Shinamar, and his source is from something that we noted in yesterday's Daf, Ki Am Kadosh Ata, L'Hashem Elokecha, which is written in Parshat Re'eh, in between the Isur of Nevela and Basar Bechalav, Nemar La'alan, and it says in Mishpatim with regards to a Trefa, Banche Kodesh Chiyun Li, Sarzadeh Trefa Lo Tochelu La'Kelab Tashlichun Oto. So he has this Gezera Shava of sorts of Kodesh Kodesh that teaches you that just like the Kodesh that is associated with Trefa means an Isur Achila, Malalan Asur Bachila, but Mutar Bahana, because it says Lakelav Tashlikun Oto, which means there is a Heter Hana'a. Afkan, so too, by Basar Bachalav, which has Kiyam Kadosh Atal Hashem Lokecha, so there too, it's an Asur Bachila, Umutar Bahana'a. And the Baal Tosafot explain over here that it still should be subject then to a Kal V'Chomer, which is, if it's Asur Bachila, then the Kal V'Chomer that we learned in yesterday's daf should then be applied to it and then give you an Isur Hana'a on top of the Isur Achila. And so Tosafot says that this view of Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda is that when you have a Gzeirah Shavah like this, that you can't have a Gzeirah Shavah L'Mechsa. It has to be a full-fledged Gzeirah Shavah. And the Gzeirah Shavah says, Asur Bachila Mutar Bahana'a. And just like the Treifa is that way, so too is the din of Basar Bechalav. On the other hand, the view that we saw in yesterday's daf that brought it from the Isur Achila from Treifa and then added on the Kabachomer on top of it says, Mahani Gzeirah Shavah Umahani Kabachomer. He says the Gzeirah Shavah has to work, but it can only work up to the point of Isur Achila, because I also have a Kal V'Chomer. And so the combination of the two give me an Isur Achila and Isur Hana'a. But this view of this Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda is clearly that it's the Gzeirah Shavah alone that governs over here. And therefore there's an Isur Achila, but there is a Heter Hana'a. Rabbi Kiva Omer, Chaya Be'of. Rabbi Kiva says that Chaya and Of are only Asurim Midrabanan, but not Asurim Midraita. Hani Ha'afkinu L'Kiddush Shmuel. Wait a minute, how can he use Lo Tevashel Gedi B'Chalei Bimo, one to teach you an exclusion of Chaya, one to teach you an exclusion of Oaf, and one to teach you an exclusion of Beimat Meya? We already used all of these Limudim for that which Shmuel told us back on Daf Kuf Yud Gimel Medbet. Kasava Rabbi Akiva, Isur Chalal Isur. First of all, Rabbi Akiva holds Isur is Chalal Isur, therefore he doesn't need a specific pasuk to include Chalev Umeita, and he doesn't have to have something that includes Chalev and Nevela to have Basar B'Chalav devolve upon those Yisurim, because he has a general principle of Yisur Chalal Yisur. So therefore, Lo Tzrich Hikra. He doesn't need two of the Psukim for that purpose, even though, again, Shmuel in the end only required one Pasuk for both of them. Shalil, the fetus, the fact that it is subject to Basar B'Chalav, he doesn't need a Pasuk for that, because Gedi Ma'alyo, because it's a full-fledged Gedi. Just because it's a fetus doesn't change the fact that it is a Gedi. If it's a Gedi, it's subject to the pasuk that says, Lo Tevashil Gedi V'Chalei V'Mo. Ha'itru Lahu Kuhu. So there, right now, he has all of them available to him for a drasha, prat chayav of for the bay matzmeya, and he utilizes them there to exclude a chaya, an oaf, and a behema tmeya, to tell you all of those are not a sari midoraita with regards to basar bechalav. And Shmuel uses one of them to exclude a behema tmeya, which Rabbi Akiva does in a similar fashion, and that's why once he takes away the Isra Chalal Isra issue and Shalil, he has two left over, one to exclude chaya and one to exclude oaf. Now Rabbi Akiva seemingly agrees that there is an Isra derabanan, that is that he goes there chaya atu behema, since the basar chaya looks very similar, it seems, or tastes similar to that of a behema. So therefore, he was oser behema with chalav midrabanan. And once he was doing that, he already put oaf in the picture and made anything that's not behema Torah, but it is something that you can't eat in terms of basar, asur midrabanan. Yosef Aglili Omer, Lemer lo tochlu kol nevela. And we saw over there the hekesh between nevela and basar bechalav. That teaches anything that's subject to Nevela is subject to Basar Bechalav. Ma'ika ben Rabbi Yossi Aglila Rabbi Akiva. What is the nafkamina between them? Ikbenayu chaya. The difference between them is a chaya. According to Rabbi Yossi Aglila, Savar chaya do'raito is asur mi do'raito because chaya is subject to Nevela. It does not have the exclusion because of Chalei Bimo, because it does have Chalei Bimo. Therefore, just like a behema Torah, a chaya Torah is subject to the din do'raito of Basar Bechalav. Rabbi Akiva Savar chaya de'rabanan. Then Rabbi Akiva holds that chaya is only asur midrabanan, not midoraita, because he has it excluded from the pasuk of lotavashel gedi the chalev imo. Ibayetema oaf yikabanayu. Some suggest that even an oaf is enough community in them. Rabbi Akiva savar chaya v'oaf ena minatorah ha midrabanan asire. They're not asure minatorah, but they're at least asur midrabanan. Rabbi Yosef Lili savar oaf afil midrabanan la milo asir. That even midrabanan oaf is mutar legamre. That's because, according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, chaya Torah and behema Torah are sari midoraita. And there is no din derabanan. Oaf is a totally different entity. It doesn't get mixed up with the chaya and the behema. And therefore, it's mutar legamre versus chaya and behema Torah, which are sari midoraita. For Rabbi Akiva, where it really has a din derabanan with regards to chaya, because it would get mixed up with behema Torah, once he already was goes there by the chaya, he was also goes there by the oaf as well. Tanya Nami Achi, we have a breita that's supportive of this view that Rabbi Yossi Aglili believes that oaf is mutar de gamre, because bimkomosh Rabbi Eliezer ayu kortim etzim lasod pachamin lasod barzel b'shabbat. This is based on a machloka that's found in Rabbi Eliezer de Mila in the Gemara in Shabbat as to what is permitted to violate in order to a mitzvah that is doche Shabbat. So Brit Milah is permitted to be done on Shabbat because Milah is doche to Shabbat. Question is, when Milah is doche Shabbat, does that mean just the performance of the mitzvah itself is doche Shabbat? Or any preparations that facilitate your ability to do that mitzvah are also doche to Shabbat? And so Rabbi Eliezer of the belief that even makshirei Milah, even things that are done to prepare for the Milah itself and to facilitate the Milah, they're doche Shabbat, and that's what it says here. They used to chop down trees, burn them into coals, and then use those coals to make metal for the knife to do the Brit Milah, even on Shabbat, because Rabbi Eliezer was of the belief that Machshirei Milah are dochim et HaShabbat. Bimkomosho Rabbi Yossi Aglili, the Tano that we just spoke about, Ayuachlim Basar Uof Bechalav, they used to eat chicken and milk together without any issue. So first of all, what you see from here is that if a city follows a Mora D'Atra, and that individual is the Moradatra of the city, even though their view is differentiated from other places, as long as they have a Moradatra who is a Talmud Chacham Gadol and is distinguished amongst other Chachamim as well as in other places, if they have a differentiated view with regards to one thing, if this place follows that individual through and through, then you let them do that, and it's permissible to do such. And so in the place of Rabbi Yossi Aglili, they held like Rabbi Yossi Aglili, and they ate milk and fowl together. And in the place of Rabbi Eliezer, they allowed Machshirei Milah to be doche et Shabbat, even though there was a dissenting view, but because Rabbi Eliezer was a Talmud Chacham Gadol, and the location where he lived, everybody followed his view with regards to all matters. So in this matter too, they followed his view. And that's considered to be a valid form of psak halacha and a valid halachic practice. So now, Levi ikla de bay Yosef Rishba. So Levi went to visit the house of Yosef Rishba, which is Yosef the Fowler. Aita the Kamei Resha the Tiyusor Tavsa Bechalba. They brought before him a peacock's head that was inside of milk or together with cheese, which is fowl and milk together. Below Amarlo, below me, he obviously didn't partake of it, but he didn't chastise them or didn't say anything to them at all. And what's interesting here about the Tavsa is Rashi over here says that the Tavsa is translated into La'az as Po'on. And Agot Marie Landa says you should go back and look on Daf Samach Gimel Amud Aleph, but Rashi over there translates the Duchifat also as a Po'on. The only problem is that the Duchifat is a non-kosher bird, whereas the Tavsa that's over here from this story seems to be a kosher bird. So if you look carefully in the Rashi in Elu Trefot on Daf Samach Gimel Amud Aleph, there he translates Duchifat as Po'on Shalbaya. And the Marie Landa over there says that you have to have it be called Po'on Shalbaya, which is Zaino Pa'on Ya'ar, which means the wild Pa'on. Aval Pa'on Stam, without any qualifying term afterwards or defining term afterwards, that's an Oaf Tahor, that's a kosher Oaf, and that's what's being spoken about over here, which is this peacock's head that was put together in the milk. Now, Ki'ata L'Kamei De Rabbi, when Levi, who's a Talmud Mufak of Rabbi, comes back to Rabbi and reports to him what he saw, Amalei, my lo tash bintinu, why don't you put them into Nidoy? They're doing something that's against the Halacha or the accepted practices of Halacha. Why don't you put them into Shamta? Amalei, Ashrei the Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira, who? That's the city of Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira. V'amina, Darish Lul, ki Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Maybe Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira holds like Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Damar, Yatza Of, Shein Lo Chalav Eim. That the Of is not included under the restriction of Basar Bechalav because it doesn't have mother's milk. And not only is it excluded Midu Raita, it's also excluded Midu Rabbanan. There's no Gzera de Rabbanan, it was Mutal Gavre. And I thought maybe they held like that sheet of Rabbi Yossi Aglili, which is a valid view. So once again, you see here that where there is a practice which can be justified by a proper halachic view, then one can't chastise them or necessarily put them into nidui. And that's despite the fact that Rabbi was the gadol ador, and clearly he had the right to determine the halacha regards everyone. Plus, he could have put anyone he wanted to nidui if they did not follow his halacha. Nevertheless, after Levi says this, Rabbi seemingly acquiesces and doesn't say anything about it, showing you that even where there is a gadol ador, and even where there is maybe a fixed practice, if a certain location follows a particular rav or a particular psak halacha, and that is the misora and the minag makom, and it's based on a valid halachic position, then we don't go and tell them that they're wrong, and we don't tell them that they can't do that. We allow them to continue that practice as long as, again, it's a well-based practice that stems from a misora, and not just some sort of kula that they mistakenly landed upon or they decided that they wanted to keep. And that's what Rabbi does over here. He backs off and does not put them into nidui. Right now we move on to the next Mishnah, which is Kebat Oved Kochavim Mishon Nevela Harezo Asura. When it comes to the stomach, now the Keba, as Rashi says over here, is not the stomach itself, because if it's a Nevela or if it's from a non-Jew, then clearly the Basar of the Keba is problematic. What's being about here is the Chalav Karush B'tocha Keba. It is the milk that has curdled inside the stomach of such an animal. If it comes from an Evela, or if it comes from an Oved Kochavim, that milk that's inside that is curdled is Asura, is problematic. Hamamid Be'orshel Keba Ksheira. If a person curdles the milk inside the stomach of a kosher animal here means an animal that was shechted properly in its kasher, M.A.H. Benotein Tam. If the basar then has sufficient capacity to give flavor into the milk, that is problematic because of the fact that now you have basar b'chalav mixed together. Now, from the Mishnah, it sounds like that this is only permitted b'diavad, not l'chatchila, because if you did this l'chatchila, you would be then mixing basar b'chalav l'chatchila, and in essence, creating a bittul l'chatchila by saying, oh, the basar is not going to reach that level of tam, and that'll be okay. So b'diavad, we allow you to do this, but l'chatchila, you can't do this. The one thing that is clear here is that if you're mamid in a kosher stomach, using the stomach, the rennet, or whatever is in the stomach to cause the curdling of the milk inside of that stomach, then you have this qualification of notein tam. On the other hand, if you do it inside of an avela or a treifa stomach, then it's problematic from the outset. And the difference being is because a treifa and an avela, the basar or whatever is there, is a sore from the outset. And therefore, if there's any leaching of flavor into the item, automatically as a ma'amid, which is a central part of creation of the cheese, then you have something that is not kosher or isur that's producing it. And since from the outset there's isur that's producing it, it makes the cheese asur legamre. On the other hand, when you deal with a kosher animal, the isur here that you would have is not because of the kosher animal, but because of basar b'chalav. Basar b'chalav is not inherently asur, elim kein, there's no tein tam. The Rashba makes such a distinction, and that's actually brought the halacha in Shulchan Aruch. And therefore, inherently as a mamid, the kosher animal is not problematic. It's only once you have the flavor of that basar of the mamid that gets into the milk, then you have an Easter there. And that causes a problem for the curdling of the milk in that instant. And therefore, there is a distinction between the kosher animal, where notein tam is the threshold to determine whether the cheese is okay or not, versus that of an avela or a treifa, where as soon as you're mamid in the stomach of an avela or a treifa, the cheese that's created there is a sore, because the mamid, as a central part of the influence over the item, comes from something that is already a sore. That makes the cheese a sore, and one cannot eat that cheese. But on the other hand, kshera, shianka min a treifa, if you have a kosher animal that nursed from a treifa, then kebata asura, the milk that's curdled or found inside that stomach, is problematic, because that's the milk of the treifa. Treifa shianka min a kshera. On the other hand, if you have a treifa that nursed from a kosher animal, then the milk that comes from a kosher animal is kosher. Then kebata muteret, then the milk that's found in there, or that is curdled in that stomach, is okay, because we see whatever is inside of the stomach as being just held there, but not a part and parcel of the animal. That obviously will present a problem from the seifa to the reisha. The seifa of the Mishnah seems to indicate that the milk or whatever is in there is just independent of the stomach and it's not problematic. Whereas the reisha seems to indicate that which is found inside of it is problematic, and we're going to have to understand why it is that the milk in the first part of the Mishnah is problematic as opposed to the milk in the second half of the Mishnah. The Gemara wants to understand, Atu kebato vdecho kaveim lav nevelai. Why does the Mishnah break it up into two different things, which is the stomach of an obey kochavim and that of a nevela? Aren't they the same thing? Isn't the stomach of an obey kochavim's animal also a nevela? Amravuna, hacha velokeach kedi min obey kochavim askinan. The first case in the Mishnah is where you purchase a kosher animal from the non-Jew. Bichashinan shemen yanak min atreifa. And we worry about the fact that this animal might have nursed from a treifa. Mar says, umichashinan shemen yanak min atreifa. Do you really worry about this nursing from a treifa? Vatanan. Don't we have a Mishnah that we saw earlier on in the Masechta and also a Tosefta? Lochim beitzim in ovde kochavim. You're allowed to buy eggs from the non-Jews. Ven choshishim lo mishum nevela velo mishum treifa. We don't worry about nevelot and treifot as being the source for these eggs. And we assume, ala rov, that the animals are ksherim. And similarly with the gedi. If you buy a gedi from a non-Jew, you can assume, ala rov, that it's nursing from another kosher goat, that then that's the milk that's found in its stomach. Rather, the chashash here is that we worry about maybe that it nursed from a non-kosher animal. Well, you just told me we don't worry about a treifa. So then why all of a sudden do you worry about non-kosher animals? Treifa de lo shchicha, treifa, which is a low percentage, a tiny minority of animals that are treifot. Therefore, we don't worry about that being the case here. But tmei'ah shchicha, non-kosher animals are very common. Ish shchicha, afilu gevi didan nechosh. If it's so common, then why don't we worry about our animals or our gedim that also maybe they're nursing from non-kosher animals? It says, ana debedilianan minayu. We who don't raise and don't interact so much with non-kosher animals, therefore, it's a low percentage. Because if we see any interaction between the kosher animal and the non-kosher animal, we separate them right away. Therefore, lo gazru barabona. They don't go there that you're drinking or nursing from a treifa, because that's a very low percentage. And at tmeya, even though it's a higher percentage, but amongst Jewish flocks, they ensure that there aren't animals that are tmeyim in that vicinity, or if they are in the vicinity and they see them starting to nurse, they will separate them in order to ensure that doesn't happen. Inu de lo b'dilei minayu, they who don't care about whether it's a kosher or non-kosher animal, even if they see the gedi nursing from a non-kosher animal, they're not going to separate it. They don't see any issue with it, and therefore gozru uber abonon, and therefore their abonon were gozer in this case. Now, Tosafot over here says about chashina and shemei anak minat meya, lo kaimam on hochi. We don't paskin this way. The halacha is going to be like Shmuel, who's upcoming in the Gemara now, is going to give an alternate view as to explain the Mishnah. And in giving that alternate view in the Mishnah, he tells you that we're not worried, therefore, about buying kosher animals from the non-Jews. And that's what Tosafot says over here. We use the rennet that is found in the stomachs of calves that we buy from the non-Jews. And we don't worry about the fact that maybe it nursed from a non-kosher animal. The Tosafot says, halacha, this first view is definitely rejected by the Gemara because of what Shmuel is about to say. And he speaks about the fact that their minhag was to buy the kosher animals for non-Jews, and they use the rennet that's found in the stomach to curdle the milk, so they don't worry about the fact that that milk came from a non-kosher animal. Shmuel Amar, so here's the alternate view of how to explain the Mishnah by Shmuel, which is Chadak Tani. Their one statement, Heibat Shchitat Oved Kochavim. The stomach that comes from a shchita of a non-Jew, nevela, because this shchita is not a good shchita. Therefore, the resultant animal is a nevela. And now, as a nevela, it's going to be problematic. Now, Tosfot says, and what is the chiddush of Shmuel over here, that we already know back in the first parak on Daf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph. The fact that you need to teach me that a keba of a goy is considered automatically to be a nevela, that's pretty straightforward. That the Gemara back on Yud Gimel Amud Aleph already told us that. So all you need to write in the Mishnah was kebat goy asura. What's the whole business about a nevela? So there are some achronim that want to answer the question about Tosafot to say that had you just written kebat goy asura, you might have said that the cheese or the milk that's found inside of there is only problematic because of marat ayin, because it looks like you're eating nevelot. But we wouldn't have thought that it was actually nevela and considered to be asur legamre, and that's why the Mishnah phrases it not just that kebat goy asura, but kebat goy is a nevela, and therefore it's asura, to tell you that it's asur mi'ikar adin, and not just because of marat ayin. And so from here it sounds like not only is it problematic to curdle inside the nevela, but even the milk that's found inside of that, it's curdled inside of there, is problematic. And so now the Gemara says, Umi amar Shmuel hachi. Did Shmuel really say this? V'amar Shmuel mibnei ma'asru gvinat ovdei kochavim. What is the problem with cheeses that come from non-Jews? Mibnei shmamino to ba'or kebat nevela. It's because they curdle it inside of the stomach of a nevela. Hakeba gufa sharia. But that means that the milk that's found in there should have been fine. I mean, it's only if you curdle it does it have a problem, because then the mamid is a nevela. But the milk that's found in the stomach seems to be what we would call perish ba'alma, just discard or stuff that is just water, and therefore it should be mutar. Where it says, lokasha kan kodem chazara, kan achar chazara. It has to do with whether it was before or after the reversal. This is a reference to a story in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, where they were oser gvinot akum, and then the Rabbi Yehuda reports on a discussion that happened between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yeshua. They were walking together, and Rabbi Shmuel queries of Rabbi Yeshua, why is it that the gvinot of the akum are asurim? And Rabbi Yeshua answers him, that's because the non-Jews are mamid. They curdle their milk in kebab and nevela, the milk or the granite that's found in the stomach of the nevela. Shmuel says, why is that a problem? Because we know by the stomach of an korban olah, which is much more chamur than the Easter of a nevela, because an olah is asur ba'na'a, whereas a nevela is only asur ba'achila. There you do have permission to drink the milk that's inside the stomach of the olah. It's not asur ba'na'a, because if a kohen is considered to be someone who's not so picky, he can take out the stomach and drink that milk that's curdled somewhat or hardened inside of the stomach of the olah. If that's the case, certainly you should be able to do it from the nevela. And because of that, Chazar Bo Rabbi Yeshua. Yeshua then backed away and said that that's not the reason why the cheese of the goyim is asur, but rather because of Tekrovet Avodah Zarah. We worry about the fact that these animals were dedicated towards Avodah Zarah. They were Mukrav Legabe Avodah Zarah. And then with Avodah Zarah, there's anything you get from them is problematic. And therefore, if they curdled the milk inside the stomach of an animal of Avodah Zarah, then that would be significantly problematic. It would be asur ba'achila and ana. And that's exactly what Rabbi Yishmael says back to him. Well, if that's the case, then why is it only asur ba'achila, the gvinot of an akum? There should be asur ba'ana as well. The Gemara leaves off over there, and Rabbi Yoshua takes him off to another topic. And that's because it was a new gzerah, and they had a policy when they had new gzerah not to disclose the reason for the gzerah, so that people wouldn't start to question or undermine the gzerah. They waited for the gzerah to take hold, and then only afterwards would they then explain the reasoning behind it. In the end, what the real reason is the Gemara in Masechet Avodah Zarah, Lamed Hey Amud Aleph, Lamed Hey Amud Bet, brings a number of suggestions from the Amoraim as to what was the Gzera in the end. Shmuel's statement over here is actually his position over there, Mipnei Shemabinin Otobor Kibat Nevela, that they actually curdle the milk inside of non-kosher stomachs. Tosfot over here on the Mishnah says, why should it matter if it's a non-kosher stomach? Even if it's a kosher stomach, it should be problematic. And Tosfot over here says, the Yesh Lomar Deshum Basar B'Chalav Ayuch Asurim B'Safek. It was just a safek because of Basar B'Chalav, they wouldn't have made it Asur because it's only an Isur D'Rabbanan, because only Derech Bishul Asra Torah. For that type of safek, they wouldn't have been Oser the curdling of the milk inside of a kosher stomach, but by a non-kosher stomach where it's not an issue of basar b'chalav, but an issue of isur. And as we said before, anything that your ma'amid be isur takes on the character of the ma'amid, then in that instance, it will be asur even in a kosher hu. And that's the reason behind the gzeira. Now there is a machloket rishonim with regards to what exactly is the din with a ma'amid that is asur. The Rabbeinu Tam believes that it has the same din as a ma'amid of basar b'chalav, which is its notin tam. The second view is that of the Ramban, who brings the name of Rimi Gash, which we explained before, which is that when it's a ma'amid of isur, then it's asur b'koshu. When it's a ma'amid of basar b'chalav, where the isur is only created once there is a notin tam, then it is benotin tam. And there's actually a third view that even a ma'amid of heter, sar b'chalav, is problematic. Even the case of our Mishnah would have been a problem. Even ba'elef, it wouldn't have been batel. And the reason our Mishnah says that it's benotein tam is because there is a goreim acher of heter. And therefore, when you have zev zeh goreim, then the issue is notein tam. And we ask you, Paskin, like that middle view of the Ramban, that when it is isur, then even b'koshu, it is problematic. But sar b'chalav would be problematic if it's notein tam. But even in the case where it's a ma'amid of isur, if there is another ma'amid of heter that is working over there, and then it's zev zeh goreim over there, then we flip back to being the question of notein tam, as long as there's shishim of heter connected to isur. Other suggestions that are brought in the Gemara and Avodah Zarah to what was the gzera in the end are that of Rav Malki of Hashem Rav Adar Bavo, that is because they machlikim paneh b'shuman chazir, that they based the top of the cheese with pig fat. And there are three other suggestions made by the Amorim over there, but they face other questions or difficulties in the Gemara. So now what the Gemara answered over here was, Kan Kodem Chazara, Kan Achar Chazara. Our Mishnah was taught before Rabbi Yoshua backed away from the reasoning that the remnant of an Avela was problematic. Our Mishnah is based on that original assumption that the remnant of the non-kosher animal was problematic. And therefore it says, Kebat Nevela is a surah because of that. But after the Chazara, that's where Shmuel is bringing his psak, which is Mashasru Gvinat Ovdechem Ishmabinim Otam Bo'or Kebat Nevela. It is only when they curdle the cheeses, that's a problematic. But the milk itself that's in there is not problematic because the milk itself is considered to be Perish Me'alma, Renet alone. And that gives you the distinction in the din here. Shmuel is explaining our Mishnah over here. The Mishnah is before that Chazara, when they thought even the Renet or even the milk that was found inside the stomach was problematic. Once they reversed that position, Rabbi Yeshua said, it's not because of that, it's because of Avodah Zarah, then it became Mutar. But this Mishnah was before that Chazara. And since they taught it that way, once it became a Mishnah and was kept that way, they didn't change it, even though the Halacha had changed. And that explains the difference in the Halacha of Shmuel, where here he's explaining our Mishnah, whereas over there, he's giving you the Halacha. And the Halacha is that the milk that's found in the stomach is not problematic. It's only if you curdle in the stomach of the Nevela that it does present a problem. Now, the Mishnah continues and says, K'sherash yanka mina treifa. If you have a kosher animal that nursed from a treifa, haktani reisha kebat ovdechu chavim shal nevela hazeh asura. You just told us that the milk that's found in the animal's stomach is problematic. You're saying there that milk that's found inside of a treifa is totally fine, but milk that's found inside of the stomach of a nevela is problematic. So if you say that a treifa that drinks or nurses from a kosher animal, that the milk in there is considered to be perish, and therefore it's mutar, that should be true even by the case of a nevela that has milk in its stomach. If you believe that the milk that goes into the stomach remains intact, and that's why the treifa that was yonek from the ksheira is mutar, because it's milk from a ksheira, then why should a nevela not have that same din? If the milk of the nevela, which could be from a milk from a kosher animal, why should that be any different, and it should be fine to drink it? So why is there any distinction between milk that's found in the stomach of a nevela than there is for milk that's found in the stomach of a treifa? If, again, it came from a kosher source, why is there any difference in the din? Either it's perish and it's nothing, and therefore it's nothing in both cases, or it's milk from a kosher animal in both cases, and it should be totally fine. How do you reconcile that? So, over there, it looks like you're eating nivelot, because you're eating the milk that's coming out of a nivela. That looks like you're eating a nivela. Over here, where there is shchita, it might be a treifa, but there was still a shchita done, doesn't look like you're eating from something that's not kosher. Amalei Rava, v'lav kol dechenu, isn't it a kal v'chomer? Ma nevela demi'isa, a nevela which is disgusting to people, yishar le kebata, if you let them drink the milk that's found in the stomach, Lo ata nemeichal mina. They're not going to eat the actual nevelah because the people stay away from nevelot. Amart lo. There you said you can't eat the milk that's inside the stomach. Treifa shchuta. Deisharit ata nemeichal mina lo kosher kain. In a case where you have a treifa that has milk inside, if you let them drink the milk from inside of the stomach, then people are going to come to eat the treifa. The treifa is not disgusting. The treifa is just something that has some problem with it, but it was shechted. It could have been otherwise a healthy animal. So why wouldn't you be gozer? If you're gozer by the case of nevela, why wouldn't you be gozer by the case of treifa? Ella, Amar Rav Yitzchak, Amar Rav Yochanan, no kasha. There's no stira between the reisha and the seifa of the Mishnah. Kan kodem chazara, kan achar chazara. Similar to what we saw before, that the beginning of the Mishnah is before they retracted the statement that the milk found inside of the keba, inside of the stomach of the nevela, was problematic. Kanachar chazara, this is after that they retracted that and said that's not the reason why cheeses of goyim are problematic. Mishnah lo zazamim koma, and the original version of the Mishnah doesn't change because that was the way it was learned originally. And even though it didn't change, they left the Mishnah in place. So the first half of the Mishnah is prior to that retraction. And therefore, they said that the liquids that are found in the stomach of a nevela are asurim. But that was before Rabbi Shmuel compelled Rabbi Yeshua to admit that that can't be the reason. And that's not the reason that cheeses are asurim, because they're curdling them with the milk that's found in a nevela, and they have a status of nevela. Because the milk found in the stomach of a nevela is not problematic. And that's really given to us by the second half of the Mishnah. It says that milk that's found in the stomach of a treifa doesn't have a din like a treifa. It has milk like it's as if been stored in a package inside of there. And therefore, as long as the milk was kasher, then the milk that's found in there is still okay. And if you believe that it's perish, it's not even if the milk wasn't kasher that's in there, it's not problematic because it's considered to be waste or liquid that isn't problematic at all. Over here, it's worthwhile just to note that we had learned before about the four different stomachs of the cow, where there was the rumen, the keres, then there was the reticulum nevada kosot, then there was the hamasas, or the hemsase, which was the omasim, which was the third stomach. And then there's the fourth stagalak, which is the kebar, the abomasim. What's interesting is that milk that is swallowed by a calf has a special direction where it doesn't go through the stomachs of the calf, which is an amazing part of the Bria, that Kodesh Baruch Hu made it, that when a calf is born, there is a special, what they call an esophageal groove, which is a muscular fold that allows the food that is digested or swallowed by the calf to bypass the rumen and the reticulum and omasum and go straight through to the abomasum to the keba where the milk will sit. And that's why maybe some of the discussion over here about the milk in the keba of the animal is being discussed over here, because the milk avoids much of the digestive process. For a calf, that's the direct route of the milk until it reaches the keba itself to the abomasum. And then when you find milk in there, a lot of times it will be milk that is still as milk and has yet to be digested and taken down. So it happens to be an unusual phenomenon of the calf, which later on seals up, because as the cow then grows older and doesn't nurse anymore, but rather eats feed, at that point it needs all four stomachs to digest the food that it's eating. But had the milk gone through the four stomachs, it would have destroyed the milk before it got to the keba of the calf, and then would not provide the nutrients that it needs from the milk, and because it would have been already destroyed or ruined by the earlier stomach. So it has a bypass that allows the milk to go through directly to the abomasum in the keba. And that might be some of the discussion over here as to whether they consider it to be milk or perish in this case. Amar Rav Chiya Bav, Amar Rav Yochanan. And now we have here a series of alachot brought down, which is Mamidim bekebat nevelot, Mamidim bekebat shchitat oveg kochavim. One is allowed to be mamid in the milk that is found in the stomach of a nevela, but you may not do it in a keba, an animal that was shechted by an obi kochavim. Amar lefanav Rabbi Shimon bar Abba, kiman. Who are you holding like? Ki Rabbi Eliezer, damar, stam machshava obi kochavim, lo bedat kochavim. Like Rabbi Eliezer, who says, when an obi kochavim does shechita stam, we assume he's doing it the avodah zara. Amar le, ve'ele kiman. Who else would I be holding like? That is exactly what the reason is here. So ein hakanami, the milk that's inside the stomach in and of itself is not problematic. The problem here is that it is shechted by an obi kochavim whose dot is stam default to avodah zarah. And in avodah zarah, the liquids in the stomach, even though they're not meaningful in terms of being ochel, that is asur, they're problematic because they give heft to the animal, which then is beneficial to those that are worshipping the avodah zarah. And given that, they're asurim be'achila and asur ba'ana. So kiyata Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak amar Rav Yochanan. Before Rav Chiya Bav quoting Rav Yochanan, now we have Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak quoting Rav Yochanan. Mamidim ben bekebat nevela, ben bekebat shchitat oveg kochavim. Shlo lachush l'divir Rabbi Eliezer. And here we have a different version of that of Rabbi Yochanan, which is that whether you use the liquid milk that is found in the stomach of a Nevela, or whether you do it in the milk found in the stomach of an animal that was shechted by an Oved Kochavim, both of those are mutar to be used in order to curdle milk, not the stomach themselves, but the liquids inside of the stomach. And we don't worry about that view of Rabbi Eliezer, that stam shechita of an Oved Kochavim is Avodah Zarah. Hilchata, and the halacha is Eim Avidim Ba'or Kebat Nevela. One cannot curdle inside the stomach itself of the Nevela. Aval Mevidim Bekebat Nevela. But you can't use the liquid or the rennet that's found inside of a stomach of a Nevela. Ube Kebat Shechitat Oved Kochavim. And similarly, you can use the rennet or that liquid that is found inside the stomach of the Shechit of an Oved Kochavim, like that second version of Rabbi Yochanan. The remainder of the Gemara, according to Rashi, is eliminated because Rashi thinks that the halacha is not like the remainder over here, and that was incorrectly placed in the Gemara. The Baalei Tosafot uphold this girsa, and we'll explain both of them. If you take the liquids out of a kosher animal that nursed from a treifa, the kosher came to kebat treifa, she uncoming a ksheira, and certainly from the stomach of a treifa that nursed from a ksheira, those are fine. My taima, chalav hamikunas ba pirsha be'almahu. That which is inside there is considered to be pirsha be'alma, is not problematic whatsoever, and therefore it is all mutar, just like it's mutar in the stomach of the nevela, and in the stomach of the shechita oved kochavim. It's also kosher in the stomach of a kosher animal that nursed from a treifa, or a treifa that nursed from a kosher animal. All of those are fine because everything is pirsha be'alma, and that is the halacha. Now, that's the girsa that the Baalei Tosfot say we have. He says, "Ulechora girsa zu kasha matnitin." If this girsa seems to be at odds with our Mishnah, the Tanakh Sheira, she uncommon a treifa kebata asura, and our Mishnah says that an animal that nursed from a treifa is problematic, and according to the Gemara, that's post the chazara. So, that's only when the milk is still intact inside of the stomach. Then the din is that it's problematic. The lo choshev pirsha, because then it's not considered to be pirsha. Aval hakarush v'tocha keba, choshev pirsha. Once it already starts to coagulate and to curdle inside the stomach itself, then that is considered to be pirsha waste, and it doesn't have a din of chalav anymore. V'oto karush, lefi deravav, afilu nimlach v'tocha keba mutar. And that curdled stuff, even if you salt it inside the keba, is not going to be a problem, because it's not classified as milk anymore. And therefore, that's how the Rabbeinu Tam deals with the what seemingly is a stira here between the Psach Halacha at the end of the Gemara and our Mishnah, and which Rashi eliminated because of the stira with our Mishnah. From our Mishnah, it sounds like if you find milk that came from a treifa in the stomach of a ksheira, that would be problematic. It's only in the stomach of a nevela, or in the stomach of a shechita dovei kochavim, that would be mutar. In order to not have it be a stira with the Mishnah, Rashi eliminates these pieces from the girsa. The other end, Rabbeinu Tam says you keep them in, but I'll reconcile it by saying that there's a difference in what's found in the stomach. If it's still milk, then it's problematic. If it looks like milk and it's clear, like the type of milk, and again, we spoke here about the fact that the milk goes directly into the stomach and therefore could still be milk when it's in there, even though it's in the fourth of the stomachs of the animal. But if it's already begun to curdle and coagulate and turn into rot, basically, go bad and ferment inside of there, then already that's not considered to be milk, and that's pirsha be'alma, and it would be mutar, and that's how the Rabbeinu Tam reconciles over here. Then, if you go to Rashi towards the top of the Amud, there's a very long Rashi that speaks about his Psach Halacha with regards to this. And again, this is Rashi the Shitato, which is V'chalav hanimtza karush b'or hakeba. If you find inside of the stomach this milk that is already fermented and hardened somewhat, shemochotim ota be'ora. If you salt it there in the stomach itself, whether you add other milk, or whether you just salt it and leave it in there, that is really basar bechalav, and the sor hagvina, the cheese that's made from that is completely asur, isur gomor, and I have no way to say that's mutar. It's clear the Rabbeinu Tam disagrees with him. The Rabbeinu Tam says that the milk already reaches that point, it's not considered milk anymore. And therefore, if you salted it in the stomach, yes, it'd be liquid that now has flavor from basar, and that means that it would be fleshik liquid in there, but it would not be basar b'chalav. According to Rashi, even after it's karush in there, when you salt it, it now has chalav and basar, and when you salt them together, now you have basar b'chalav passing flavor between them because of the salting of them together, and that's a problem with basar b'chalav, and any cheese that results from that, whether it's from that milk itself that's found in there, or whether it's from milk that's added there that's curdled with this rennet that's found in the stomach, all of that would be problematic because of basar v'chalav. V'yesh matirin oto, and there are people who are matir it, including his grandson, the Rabbeinu Tam. Obviously, Rashi not speaking about his grandson. Mishum davalei notein tam bar notein tam. They claim that it's a derivative notein tam. V'rochokot zog mizok rochok mizrach mimarav. They have a total misunderstanding of the loch over here. Notein tam by notein tam is because, like in the case before where the meat was inside of the kara, and then after the meat was removed, then you put in fish into the kara, that's notein tam by notein tam. Because over there, the basar gives flavor into the pot, then the pot gives flavor into the fish. The flavor that's coming from the pot to the fish isn't mamashut, isn't real basar, it's just the flavor that came from the meat that was in the pot previously. That's what's called notein tam bar notein tam. Aval chalav animlach v'basar b'mishnatenu tam zeh b'zeh nasu shneihem isur. Over here where you're salting the milk together with the kebat in the Mishnah, when you do that, you have basar that's actively there, and you have milk that is actively there. And that's basar b'chalav, literally. Both things are extant there. It's not just the flavor of one another. The mamashut of the kebat is passing into the milk or the cheese, and the cheese is passing that into the basar. Now you have basar b'chalav. It's not notein tam or notein tam. It is notein tam, period. V'kol tam ayotzeo min ha-chalav, ben tam chalav shibo, ben tam basar shibo, kol asur, lefi shukula nevela. And once that happens, the entirety of the item is asur b'basar b'chalav. It all becomes like it is nevela. And then any flavor from that rennet, or any flavor from that stomach that is there, will be considered isur basar b'chalav, and any flavor it gives will create a problem in the cheese that is created. And then when this chalav gets mixed in with other chalav, other milk of cheeses, have a min b'mino, it becomes b'mino, and min b'mino is not batel. This is Rashi the Shita told that min b'mino is not batel, and therefore now you have an isur betoch, an isur of chalav, now that's a basar b'chalav, that's together with another min of chalav, and they're not batel, because aloha is like rav, and therefore the min b'mino b'koshu. And then Rashi has a huge mea culpa over here. I used to say that this is okay. As long as they didn't put new milk into it, I thought if you salted the stomach with the milk that was karush in it together, it was fine. It wasn't a problem. And I was mistaken. Because I thought, like the Gemara in Avodah Zarah says, that by the milk or the rennet that's found in the stomach of an ola, that if a kohen wants to, he can sorfa chaya, he can drink it down without any problem. That it's nothingness. Below mitasron, it's not a sur. Belohi, that's not true. Chalav gamurhu, it is full-fledged milk. The reason that by the ola, that it's mutar, is because it's not a part of the animal. It's separate from the animal, and therefore you can drink it even as milk because it's not an ola. It's in the stomach. It's like it's deposited there. So Rashi thinks that the milk in the stomach of the animal is chalav gamur. And that's why in our Mishnah, when the treifa drinks the milk from the kosher animal, the milk that's found in its stomach is totally fine, because it's if it's deposited into the stomach of the treifa, and that's whether it's milk or whether it's already started to ferment or curdle, all of that is considered to be milchik, milk that comes from a kosher animal, and that's why it is mutar. But vice versa, where the kosher animal nursed from the treifa, that milk is treifa, and it doesn't change it. So according to Rashi, the maskona, the milk that is found in the stomachs of the animals is milchik, and therefore it presents a problem for a number of things. Number one is, that even if you don't add other milk to it, it is problematic if it's salted together with the stomach, because then you have basar b'chalav. It also is considered being milchik if you take it out and then you want to utilize it. It is milchik. And number three is that if you have milk from a non-kosher animal or milk from a treifa that's inside the stomach, it's going to be problematic because it remains chalav and it's not pure shah. Given that, Rashi can't bring the final psak of the Gemara that when you find milk of a treifa inside the stomach of a kshera, that it's fine. Because Rashi thinks that that milk is real milk. If it's real milk, then it's going to be a milk of a treifa, and it's problematic. And that's why Rashi eliminates those last two lines of the Gemara and reconciles with our Mishnah, saying that milk that's found in the stomach is milk. Rabbeinu Tam disagrees and says it depends what you find in the stomach. You find milk in the stomach, it's milk. You find other than fermented milk in there, it's already karush and hardened already in there and curdled. That's not milk anymore. That's pir shabalma. Once it's pir shabalma, that's how you can get the halacha at the end of our Gemara and still reconcile with our Mishnah, which was speaking about milk, not about pirsha, where it was already curled or karush. And again, that will explain the halacha according to both of them as to why the milk that's found in the stomach of a nevela or inside the stomach of a kosher animal that was shechted by an ovid kochavim, why those are considered to be fine, because whatever's deposited in there is exactly that. It's deposited in there. So according to Rashi, it's milk, but it's deposited in there, and milk came from kosher animals, it's fine. On the other hand, for the Rabbeinu Tam, even if it was from non-kosher animals, it would be fine as long as it's reached the point where it's karush already. But even if it's not karush, you'll agree with Rashi that it's just deposited there. And since this nevela, or this kosher animal that was shechted by an ovei kuchavim, nursed from a kosher animal, the milk that's found in there should be totally fine. And that's why you can use it to curdle cheese afterwards, or use that rennet to curdle cheese afterwards.
There is a third view, which is the view of the Rif and the Rambam, which is more makil than both the Rabbeinu Tam and Rashi, which says that anything found in the stomach of the animal is deemed to be perish, like the final line in our Gemara. And in that way, anything that's found in the stomach of animals should be totally fine. And that means that a treifa that nursed from a ksheira, or a ksheira that nursed from a treifa, whether it's clear milk or it's already fermented and partially curdled, all of that would be considered to be perish be'alma, and it would be mutar to use it to curdle milk. And they would have to say that the part of the Mishnah says that a ksheira that was yonek from a treifa that is problematic, that was also kodem lechazara, and the conclusion of our Gemara is post the chazara, where the milk is considered to be pirsha ba'alma, and therefore it's never problematic. And that's where the Shulchan Aruch paskens halacha, although the Ramah says that they're based on the Yeshomrim that the Shulchan Aruch brings down, which is the sheet of their Rabbeinu Tam, that our minog is like their Rabbeinu Tam. And then the Shach goes one step further and says, we're machmir for the sheet of Rashi, and that's brought down by some of the Achronim that we hold like the Shach, and we're machmir for the sheet of Rashi, that anything that's found inside of the animal's stomach is considered to be milk. And therefore, in cases where it's kosher milk, it would be fine. In cases where it's a chashash, or possibly not kosher milk, it'd be problematic. And then if it was salted or cooked together with that stomach, then you would have problems of basar v'chalav because of the fact that it's considered to be milchik and the stomach is fleshik. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah on the bottom of Kuf Tet Zayin Amud Bet.